In this episode of the Smart City Podcast, I had a fantastic conversation with David Batchelor. David is a planner and history buff from Wellington, passionate about heritage and culture in our cities. He's also a fellow member of the Smart Cities Council Emerging Innovators. He talks about smart cities being a way to create great connected spaces for the people in them. He also talks about smart city as being a universal language, a level playing field where we can all communicate. He also tells us how New Zealand is currently embracing the smart city concept and the importance of overall vision and strategy. David discusses some of the things that are happening in Wellington, particularly to do with resilience. He also tells us some really cool stuff about smart heritage. We finish our conversation on public trust and the different types of feedback. This episode is personal opinion only and does not represent any company or government agency. So with that, as always, I hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it.
It's the Smart City Podcast, whoa, with smart city experts, here we go. Connecting smart technology, both big and small. Smart cities are making life better for all. Big data, emerging trends, self-driving cars and more. The Smart City Podcast is what you're looking for.
Hello, David. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. Thanks for having me.
No worries. Thanks for coming on to the podcast. Let's jump straight in. And can you tell us a little bit about your background and what you are passionate about?
Sure. I'm a planner in Wellington, New Zealand. So we do what's called resource consenting down here. So getting consent mainly for residential subdivisions and infrastructure and commercial buildings and things like that. My passion, though, is heritage and culture in cities. So big history buff. But seeing how I can apply that to cities and where we live.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you and I are part of the Smart Cities Council Emerging Innovators. That's how we met. So tell us how or what sparked your interest in this smart city space.
Yeah, I kind of stumbled into the smart city arena when just actually through LinkedIn. I think I saw a post you might have been tagged in, Adam Beck. I've tagged you in, but I saw it as a breath of fresh air, really, into the area of consenting or planning here in New Zealand and especially in heritage. So a huge opportunity to just improve what we're doing. And I think that's really relevant for planning and heritage, as both of them tend to fall back on process and established patterns of thinking. So I'm just looking for a way to mix it up and see what's coming around the corner.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. So tell us what a smart city is to you.
I think a lot of your listeners would already know the technical definition of versions of it, of using technology, decision-making technology to improve connectivity, efficiency, and livability. But to me, a smart city is a physical space with that is effective in enabling its citizens to live within it. So that comes down to more of a social definition and how it's used, but it's pretty much creating a great connected space for the people in it.
And why do you think that this concept is so important?
The concept of smart city is important because it gives us a language and an idea to kind of grab onto, similar to the ideas or the waves of new urbanism, sustainable development, smart growth is another one with words like walkability and high density. So with those concepts come a whole way of thinking, a whole approach to the city. So with smart city, with the term and the concept, especially for a planner like myself and probably a layperson as well, it gives us like a toehold to start thinking about how technology can be used within a city. I think that's a new idea which the sector introduces to the discourse.
Yeah, definitely. So let's talk about New Zealand, and how do you think that that New Zealand is embracing this smart city concept?
Slowly and in patches. So I think we're a while behind Australia. I look over the ditch to Australia and envy of what you're federal government is doing, and all the cities are getting behind it, throwing money and teams and time and, more importantly, probably attention at the sector. In New Zealand, we don't really have a central government drive for the sector, but we do have little spots of interest popping up in local government. So I'm in Wellington, which might be the torchbearer of the smart city sector in New Zealand. We're doing great little initiatives around homelessness, around rubbish, around poverty. So they're great, but they don't really come under a central policy initiative and direction. We also have some hints of life in Hamilton, Queenstown Lakes, and Auckland. Hamilton, I think, just came out last week with a big push, but again, I haven't seen a policy. So we're a little bit different to Australia, and it comes with its pros and cons. I guess I'll just jump into it. A good part of that would be it's more natural and it's not forced. I've heard some people around Wellington talk about their approach trying to become more natural. So why have a policy? Why don't we just integrate it into what we already do? That's great, and that's more natural, and it doesn't get caught up in, I guess, the shopping list of IoT devices. You know, people going around going, oh, we must have a smart parking system or smart rubbish bins or something like that. We must have the latest. So it doesn't get bundled up in that. However, it lacks a political appetite in the direction that a policy or something higher up gives the sector. It lacks a bit of leadership. So I'm not quite sure if we're going in the right direction. Australia is a little bit ahead of us, I think, and I wish we could follow your lead.
Interesting. I would have thought that, well, the people that I've spoken to in New Zealand, and maybe I'm just talking to all the cool people, but it seems to be quite a lot going on, particularly, I guess, in Wellington and in that kind of council space, really embracing the technology piece. And maybe it is because it's a bit more organic. You've just got some people in there that are really keen to, just progress forward with good planning and calling, and using technology in the smart city.
Yeah, we do have some fantastic people, especially in Wellington, who are pushing it along, and they're champions. They're absolutely amazing. Without them, the sector would probably fall over because they are everywhere and they're kind of all knowing. But again, yeah, there's no, if they drop dead one day, what would the sector be in Wellington without them? That's a concern I have. And so I would personally like to see a little bit more, not legislation, but policy or guidance around it, a bit of more of an institutional approach to it.
Cool. Well, let's talk about some of the projects and things that you're currently working on. We had a bit of a chat before we started recording, and I think you, like I, have many things boiling. It's just what we want to keep boiling along so it doesn't spill over, depending on where our time is the most. So tell us about some of those things you're working on at the moment.
Yeah, so not in my paid work, but as emerging innovators, it's kind of given me a great platform to reach out to people and ask, what are you doing? How can I help? And I've stumbled into trying to pull together a resilience tool for the city of Wellington with the council, Ministry of Culture and Heritage, and a couple other agencies, which tells a story of how the city is getting more resilient, because we face a lot of earthquakes and other things that can destroy us or wipe us off the toehold of the North Island. So it tries to tell the story, but also embed that data into the public's thinking about safety. We have every couple of months, there's a news headline which comes out going, oh, Cuba Street or Lambton Quay, which is our two main shopping streets here, are the most dangerous in the country because of all these heritage buildings are going to fall down on top of everybody. And there's a huge moral panic about it. Then politicians come out saying we must destroy the whole city and build it back so it can't fall down. And then you've got the heritage side coming out going, oh, this is all rubbish, but nobody's really pointing to any facts. So we're looking to see to show the story of how these buildings aren't actually dangerous, or maybe identify the ones that are, and so we can actually have a proper conversation about it. So it originally came from a heritage point of view, but it's more coming up to a resilience, public safety, storytelling approach.
Yeah, wow, that sounds really interesting. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's a bit of a challenge. It's a bit of a challenge trying to get everybody to the table, but I reckon with this new sector, it's really just going to open doors to more more sharing of information and sharing of visions, which I hope this will hopefully all come to.
Yeah, definitely. So with the emerging innovators, so one of the other things that we're looking at is kind of this regional snapshot. Don't know whether we'll get there or not, but I'm interested to like hear what you've kind of learnt from trying to pull together that information. Is this where the resilience thing came from, or is that something different?
The resilience thing came from, again, just my interest in heritage and buildings and trying to actually solve some questions that I see floating around the city. But the regional snapshot has really highlighted that how broad the sector is. Like, so the regional snapshot is trying to pretty much take the temperature, take a snapshot, if you want, of the sector and say, here, this is what we're thinking and what we're doing right now, where to go from here. And I keep going to these events. I went to one about augmented reality and started talking to people, the data scientists there, and they have a completely different approach to how planners or engineers or consultants or politicians think about it. So, yeah, it is quite a challenge. But and the more I dig into it, the more I realize that the smart city sector might not be a sector. It's more of a way of thinking, which is quite interesting, but also just makes it a lot more complicated.
Yeah, no, I agree. I've been feeling the same because it's not the same. Yeah, there's so many different backgrounds within the smart city sector that it's, yeah, nearly can't be a sector because there's so many, it's just so diverse and can incorporate so many different things that, yeah, is it about cities? So are planners, you know, at the forefront of it, or is it about, you know, engineering? So you've got engineers and they're making things better with technology, or is it about incorporating, you know, augmented and virtual reality? So then you've got, yeah, your data scientists. It's so broad. And I mean, I think at the end of the day, it will just come down to good planning, but then maybe that's just because that's what I'm exposed to. Whereas, you know, data scientists might say, oh, well, it will just come down to having good data. Yeah. I think it's so broad that it's really hard to just capture it in a snapshot, really.
Yeah, I think the sector will probably not disappear, but it'll go the way of new urbanism, where it kind of came out and even thought it was the new best thing, but then it just kind of got adopted as common knowledge, and now it's just written into the most basic plan, most basic policy in the way of thinking. People would come through uni thinking that it's been there the whole time, and then it'll just kind of disappear. But it'll kind of always be there in the psyche of the professions. And so it's hard to say where it's going or what it is.
Yeah, definitely. Well, okay. So one thing we can be sure about is that it incorporates a lot of different disciplines. So let's talk about how we can better integrate across the different disciplines. You know, including government, academia, and other industries. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts come back to what Adam Beck of Smart Cities Council Australia and New Zealand said to me at the launch of our Wellington event, was the most important thing that we can do is learn about what other people are doing. So other professions, right? So I'm a planner, so I'd learn what a data scientist would think about the sector. Then also their view on how the city works. So they approach it completely differently, and also its issues and what we can do to fix it. And also, Adam also recommended having like an engineer friend and maybe an architect friend and probably an urbanist friend and probably some friend, which isn't even related to the urban environment, just to bounce ideas off. And so I've been doing that. And I think that's the best way to open your eyes, get your brain switched onto a different way of thinking to approach the question of how do we improve our city in a variety of ways. And so you're not just approaching it from your siloed little planner or engineer bubble, right? Because an engineer has engineering fixes. They might not be the best planner. We just probably put a zone around it. That's probably not the best way. So yeah, it's the more you learn, you realize the less you know, but that might be the best way to figure it out.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it also includes how we're working, which I find interesting, that you can't actually build a smart city in the current way of how we work, in that very traditional one-size-fits-all approach as well. So it's going to change so many things about it. And maybe it's not smart city, maybe it's just going to change just because of, the millennials coming through or whoever's going to be the next, workforce, I guess. Maybe it's not even about us millennials. Maybe it's about the younger people that are coming through and what they are kind of wanting from a city or wanting from their work or wanting from a space. It'll be really interesting to see, because I think smart cities, I mean, a lot of it is about resilience and about adapting to, the environment and what is important and what the purpose of the space is or whatever we want to call it. So yeah, it'll be really interesting to see in the next couple of years how and where the space will move for sure. Well, let's talk about emerging trends. What do you think people aren't talking about enough?
So as a planner and doing a lot of development work, that's kind of where my focus naturally lies. And I think there's a huge missed opportunity or just opportunity for local government to use social media or just the internet, so whether it's IoT or just existing communication portals or anything like that, to engage better with the public. So currently I see councils and tech companies and large business kind of setting the goalposts of what can be talked about. In the heritage world, this is called the authorized heritage discourse. And so it's kind of like when you go into a museum, they kind of tell you the narrative. You can't really make the narrative or not really shape it back into the museum. And so in the city space, I see a lot of the consultation being like, okay, we're going to now talk about traffic. Tell me about traffic. And we're only going to talk about this little issue. And these are the solutions you can pick from it. So they're very limited. Technology enables us to very quickly take the temperature or another snapshot of the public's view. You saw this kind of like in Twitter and Yik Yak, that app, I think it died. But it was very popular for people just to put their two cents into a conversation. And so why doesn't councils pick up that? Like on all of their transport apps, every city has one. Why doesn't it have a little tab where you could go to and put your two cents to a publicly notified resource consent or a plan change? Or just, the council might be asking, what's bugging you in the city today? Is your bus late? And I'll just give you a prompt, and so you can actually do something on your commute to work on the train. Like, there's so many opportunities to have a dialogue with local government, which isn't being kind of grabbed with two hands. So I think that's a huge opportunity there for local government.
Definitely. Why do you think that is? Do you think it's a mindset or a skill set issue, or what do you think, a resourcing issue?
Oh, yeah, probably resourcing. Everything kind of comes down to money. But a big thing would be mindset, but a big thing also would be the public has kind of built, the public sector is based on trust. It's based on being long established, and people know what's going to happen in process, and people trust that. If the government just starts changing every day or changing its stance or something, people are not going to have faith in it, and the whole system will fall apart, or some of it anyway. So it kind of does have to be predictable. And so they struggle with the idea of what's called network governance, which different areas of government or management can move independently of each other and affect each other. So it's a understandable worry that might destabilize their trust, but it's also a great opportunity.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. And I think that it will, depending on how it's implemented, the trust factor, it will actually increase the trust, because the community will feel like they then have some kind of say in what's happening. I mean, not, you don't want to be changing things every second of the day or anything like that, but building up that muscle for feedback, I suppose, and then actually taking that on, and then people then feel more comfortable to give proper feedback rather than just negative feedback. So then, you know, that whole feedback loop is happening. So yeah, no, definitely, I agree.
Yeah, there's in feedback through social media, I think Australian City is looking into that example at the moment, but it doesn't have to be like binding, you know, like a submission on a plan or anything like that. It could just be used as an indicator, as a starter. And then from there, you can build it up to see how it will fit in the system. Will it count as an official submission on a plan or a resource consent or something like that? Or will it just kind of be a little attachment to give the processing officer or the counsellor just a feel of what the general public might be thinking, rather than this very passionate one submitter?
Mm, yeah, definitely. Awesome. Well, it's been great to speak with you today, David. Thanks so much for sharing. And I'm really keen to hear more about your interest in the heritage space. So let's definitely chat about that again, for sure, because I think it really brings a different perspective to things, mixing the, you know, really old with the really new, and then how we can preserve kind of both and still be efficient and effective. So awesome.
Cheers. Thank you.
No worries. So I just have one last question, which is, how can people connect with you?
They can connect with me through LinkedIn. Probably the best way. You can type in David Batchelor, Batchelor with a T, so kind of like the TV show, but yeah, just bang that into LinkedIn and hopefully I'll pop up.
Awesome. And I'll put the link in the show notes so people can click away and find you. So yeah, awesome. Thanks so much for talking to me again, and we'll chat again soon, I'm sure.
Cheers. Brilliant. Thank you.
See ya. Bye.
It's the Smart City Podcast. Whoa.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart City Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes can be found at thesmartcitypodcast.com. If you have any questions or comments for me or any of my guests, connect with me via email, zoe@thesmartcitypodcast.com, or via the socials. I'm on Twitter and Facebook @smartcitypod. As always, I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it.
City Podcast is what you're looking for.